We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Sometimes there are days like this, when that slow, steady effort is rewarded with justice that arrives like a thunderbolt. This decision affirms what millions of Americans already believe in their hearts. When all Americans are treated as equal, we are all more free. This ruling will strengthen all of our communities by offering to all loving same-sex couples the dignity of marriage across this great land.
That's President Barack Obama reacting to today's Supreme Court decision to legalize homosexual marriage. He heralds it as a step forward for the country, for freedom, for liberty, for civil rights, and for the family, marriage, and society. Is it? Is it, in fact? That's his political opinion, but it doesn't happen to be the opinion of the majority of Americans. And the question that's been rolling around inside my head for the course of this day, as we prepared to bring you about 90 minutes here of in-depth analysis of the Supreme Court's decision, is we really only had 5 votes out of a population of almost 400 million people. 5 votes decided that for us today. 5 unelected votes, and that seems to be a bit of a problem. No matter how you look at it, no matter whether you favor homosexual marriage or not, does it really make sense for 5 unelected justices to decide for all of us what will be the definition or the redefinition or the continuing redefinition of marriage in America? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon. It's June the 26th, probably a day that will be marked in the history books rather prominently. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Robert George is going to join us here for the first few minutes of the program from Princeton University. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court's decision to legalize marriage from his legal perspective. Dr. Ryan Anderson joins us after that. We'll kind of get a cultural philosophical perspective on the court's decision. He is William E. Simon, Senior Research Fellow of American Principles and Public Policy for the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C. Dr. Albert Moeller, President of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, will be our guest after that. Get his thoughts on the Supreme Court decision. Dr. Alveda King, the niece of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and a Fox News contributor, will join us. One of the questions I want to put to her is, what would her uncle think about all of this? And is this really a civil rights decision, as many as are heralding it to be? And then Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be our guest. We'll get his pastoral thoughts on not only the decision, but also religious freedom and the church's response to this. All of that leading up to Issues Etc. soundbite of the week on this Friday afternoon. We'll play 4 soundbites for you, and then your votes will decide which will be Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc, or to vote in advance for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week live this Friday afternoon, June the 26th. Go to our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us for some legal analysis of the Supreme Court's decision to legalize homosexual marriage, Dr. Robert George. He's a regular guest. He holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is the founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's co-author of the book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. Dr. George, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Is there a right to homosexual marriage found in the U.S. Constitution?
No, the U.S. Constitution offers no definition of marriage. The matter is left by the Constitution in the hands of legislators. In fact, it's left to be resolved not at the federal level by the Congress, but rather at the state level. It's up to each state legislature to deliberate and decide the meaning of marriage and how it's properly to be defined. Historically, of course, all 50 states defined marriage as the conjugal union of husband and wife. That's in line, of course, with the broader tradition in the West and in the East as well, for the most part. So this is an innovation, this idea of same-sex marriage. It's something that five justices chose to read into the Constitution. They didn't find it there. You can take out the most powerful magnifying glass you can purchase, and you still will not find anywhere in there a right to same-sex marriage, or really anything about the definition of marriage, any more than you can find a right to abortion, another so-called right justices simply read into the Constitution because it happened to correspond to their own moral and political views and their own preferred policies for the country. And as such, really, a usurpation of the authority of the legislative branch. It's a usurpation of the authority of those to whom the Constitution has entrusted issues such as family law.
So what did the 5-4 majority, what reasoning did they use in order to give us legalized homosexual marriage nationwide today?
I don't think I would call it reasoning any more than I would call the so-called reasoning used to in the attempt to justify the abortion license in Roe versus Wade reasoning. It was more the expression of feeling. Plainly, the five justices are very sympathetic with the idea of gay identity and with the belief that the state ought to recognize and honor same-sex partnerships, that they should redefine marriage not as a conjugal union, not something that's actually ordered to or oriented toward procreation, whether that happens in every case or not, but rather as simply domestic partnership or companionship, a sort of sexual romantic companionship or domestic partnership. It's a feeling that the justices have used as a substitute for reasoning. They're called out on this by the dissenting justices. Powerful dissents were filed by Chief Justice Roberts, by Justices Scalia, Thomas, and Alito. The minority essentially are saying, look, the emperor has no clothes here. This is just a pure judicial manufacture on the part of the majority, who are exercising, to quote Justice Byron White's dissent in Roe versus Wade, and it's completely applicable here as well, raw judicial power, not reasoning, raw judicial power.
So in addition to being a poorly reasoned decision on the part of the court's majority, it is, in a bigger sense, a further expansion of the court's, you use the term usurpation, the court's assertion of its ability to do this very thing, to
That's
look at
right.
the Constitution and say, because of our opinion is that the Constitution really is irrelevant to this issue insofar as we're just going to read what we want to into it.
Yes, that's correct. It's an expansion of judicial power, and of course, anytime judicial power expands, it expands at the expense of the other branches of government. So you have a further advance of government by judiciary. President Lincoln, way back in the early 1860s, warned against this. In his first inaugural address, he was referring to the great usurpation of authority by the court, the Supreme Court, in the Dred Scott decision in the 1850s. And he warned that the Republican government would be compromised if the Supreme Court were permitted to get away with these kinds of usurpations. He said that we would be, in effect, resigning our government into the hands of that eminent tribunal. We would no longer be a self-governing people. And think about what Lincoln said, and I just quoted him there. Think about what Lincoln said now in light of what Justice Alito said in the opinion today in his dissent. He said, today's ruling shows that decades of effort to restrain the Supreme Court's abuses of its power have failed. Decades of efforts to restrain the Supreme Court's abuses of its power have failed. That's a powerful indictment of the court and a powerful warning about what has happened and is happening to democratic government, Republican government, as a result of an out-of-control Supreme Court, whose majority will do, now to quote Justice Scalia, whatever they think they can get away with, unquote. Quoting him there from the Windsor decision.
I'm curious about a couple things here, maybe the mechanics of it. Is it unusual for the four dissenting justices if in a 5-4 court to each write their own separate dissenting opinions?
No, it's not unusual. And some of the justices joined other dissents even while filing their own dissent. For example, Justice Scalia and I also believe Justice Thomas, yes, Justices Scalia and Thomas joined the Chief Justice's dissent, Chief Justice Roberts' dissent, and then also wrote dissents of their own.
I want your response to something that was at least the quote that we have here of Justice Anthony Kennedy writing for the majority. He says, no union is more profound than marriage. He said that the stories of people asking for the right to marry, quote, reveal that they seek not to denigrate marriage, but rather to live their lives, to honor their spouse's memory, joined by its bond. What's he saying there, and how would you respond?
Well, he's completely begging the question, and the question is, well, what is marriage? Is it a union of man and woman, husband and wife? Historically, the understanding of marriage, that is, marriage is a conjugal partnership, or is it mere sexual romantic companionship of the sort that can be engaged in not only by opposite sex partners, but by people of the same sex, two people of the same sex. But if it's the latter, then by the same token, it can be three people or four people or five people, thruples as they're now called, or quadrats or quintets of people who can unite in a so-called marriage. Justice Kennedy has given us no principled basis for distinguishing same-sex marriage from polyamorous, multiple-party sexual partnerships, which are now being, of course, advocated by influential and powerful voices in academia and activism. But even more fundamentally than that, when I say Justice Kennedy's begging the question, what that shows is that he is reading a particular answer to the question into the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution that defines marriage one way or another as a conjugal partnership, which I believe it to be, or as mere sexual romantic companionship or domestic partnership, as he evidently wants it to be. And when the Constitution is silent on the question, it's left to the people acting through their elected representatives. It is a usurpation of their authority for unelected and electorally unaccountable justices simply to impose, under the pretext of giving effect to constitutional guarantees, their particular moral and political preferences on the American people. And if we stand for it, if we let the decision stand, we will, to again quote Lincoln, to quote Lincoln's warning, have resigned our government into the hands of that eminent tribunal.
Do advocates of those other forms of marriage, mentioned polyamory, you can think of, I mean, as many different variations as are possible mathematically, I suppose. Do those others now have to have their day in court, or has the court effectively said, with by essentially striking down a definition that is exclusively man and woman, that all others are now legal too? I guess what I'm wondering is, do they have to go make their arguments, or has the court already done it for them by approving of homosexual marriage?
Well, what the court has done is remove any principled basis for distinguishing marriage, two-person marriage, dyadic as it's called, dyadic marriage, from the so-called marriages of three or more persons. Since once you've eliminated the idea of marriage as a procreative union, one that's rooted in the biological complementarity of male and female, once you've eliminated that and you've made it a matter of romance, which I have no idea on that understanding why the state should even be involved in it at all, what interest does the state have in regulating or recognizing people's romantic partnerships? But once you've done it, then there just is no principled reason why it's got to be two people. There's no magic to two. It's not a magical number. It can be three. It can be four. It can be five. And there are, as I say, influential voices who are pressing for that. And I have no idea what the court would say to try to draw the line at two in light of this opinion and some previous opinions, what the court would say, the majority would say, to try to draw the line at two if the justices, for whatever reason, wanted to uphold a state law limiting marriage to two persons.
So I wonder, we obviously can't read his mind, but we do know what kind of oral arguments he heard leading up to this decision as the swing vote. Do you believe that Justice Anthony Kennedy realizes what his siding with the majority here is going to do in that respect?
Justice Kennedy has this image of himself, evidently, as Earl Warren handing down the great decision desegregating American public institutions, beginning with public schools and Brown against the Board of Education. But that analogy between the conjugal understanding of marriage and racial injustice is an outrageous one. I mean, marriage has never had anything to do with race, and racial barriers between people are obviously unconstitutional under the Equal Protection Clause, as they were declared unanimously to be by the court in Brown against the Board of Education. For the same reason, later, bans on interracial marriages were held to be unconstitutional, as indeed there are, because marriage just never has had anything and doesn't have anything to do with race. It has everything to do with sex and procreation and reproduction and biological complementarity. Marriage is the relationship that brings together husband and wife, man and woman as husband and wife, to be father and mother to any children who may be born of that union, conferring on those children the inestimable benefit of being brought up in the committed bond, the marital love of the two human beings, the two people whose coming together brought them into existence and linking them to those families going back through time, and also conferring upon the children the great benefit of being brought up with both maternal and paternal influences and care. Not every marriage will be blessed by children, but every child will have a mom and a dad as a biological reality, will have a mom and a dad. And marriage law works fundamentally, when it works well, to ensure that as many children as possible grow up with a mom and a dad, ideally with their biological mom and dad in the intact family. That can't happen in every case, and we have the blessing of adoption and so forth when for some reason it doesn't happen, it can't happen, or something has gone wrong. But you can see what I'm saying, that marriage really is fundamentally connected to procreation all the way down. It has nothing to do with race. So Justice Kennedy's image of himself as Earl Warren fighting for the equivalent of racial justice is entirely unwarranted.
So I don't want to get too personal here, but as a fellow Roman Catholic, how disappointed are you in Justice Anthony Kennedy in his decision today?
As an American, I'm deeply disappointed in Justice Kennedy and in the four justices who joined him. As Americans, we are all dedicated to the Constitution. And justices and judges and other public officials swear a solemn oath to be guided by the Constitution. That is not a license for them to read their own particular personal views into the Constitution, depriving their fellow citizens of their rights to self-government under the Constitution. So I want to speak here not so much as a member of a particular religious tradition, but as an American. Justice Kennedy, precisely as a justice, was not called upon to defend Catholic doctrine or Catholic teaching or anything like that. As a justice, he was called upon to uphold the Constitution, and he failed to do it. That's what's disappointing.
Finally, what can and what should the proponents of natural marriage do now?
We should insist that anyone who seeks our vote for public office, whether it's in the state legislature, the governor, the Congress of the United States, the presidency, we should make sure that those candidates know that we will support them if and only if they declare this ruling to be what it is, that is, constitutionally illegitimate, and pledge that they will not permit it to stand. that they will take every step possible to overturn this ruling, and that they will refuse in the conduct of their own office to become complicit with the ruling, that their oath is fundamentally to the Constitution and not to the usurpative and illegitimate opinion of any particular justice or group of justices. So my advice to our political leaders, those who are true and faithful to the Constitution, is follow the lead and the advice, the precept and example of Abraham Lincoln. My advice to my fellow citizens is demand that our political leaders follow the advice and live by the example of Abraham Lincoln.
Dr. Robert George holds the McCormick Chair in Jurisprudence and is the founding director of the James Madison Program at Princeton University. He's co-author of the book, What is Marriage? Man and Woman, a Defense. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. George, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
When we come back on this Friday afternoon, June the 26th, we'll continue our analysis of the Supreme Court's decision to legalize homosexual marriage. Ryan Anderson will join us from the Heritage Foundation based in Washington, D.C.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
There is confusion about marriage in the world, but not with Jesus and his scriptures. Gottesdienst, the Journal of Lutheran Liturgy, will be having a conference on Tuesday, June 30th at St. Paul Lutheran Church, Hamel, Illinois, on marriages and weddings. Come and hear the theology of marriage and the theology of the wedding and be strengthened in confessing. Helpful sectionals for pastors and laity in the finest of the church's worship. For more information, go to gottesdienstonline.blogspot.com.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Christ Lutheran, Jackson, Mississippi. Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California. Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Dallas, Texas. Calvary Lutheran, Yuma, Arizona. St. Paul Lutheran, Milford Center, Ohio. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Christ Lutheran, Noblesville, Indiana. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Lexington, Kentucky. And St. James Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.